we have the Senate file before us, and my plan is just, we'll just put our bill together on the Senate file and zip it over to the Senate, and they'll accept it. So that's the direction in which we're going. We're working on the Senate file, but we apparently already did the, even though it says House File 3449, what is it? It's Senate file. We did the D. No, we're going to put the House file language into the Senate file number, which Krista says we've already done. Yes. Okay, so the first thing we do is that the DE2 amendment, which was the amendment that we went over last time at our last committee meeting, we substituted the House language for the Senate language, but we didn't put the DE2 amendment in. Okay, so I now have to move that the DE2 language goes into Senate file what? Senate file 3134. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. And we get to count Representative Winkler as part of our quorum, but we don't get to count. He just hangs out. Okay.
Madam Chair, is there someone from admin who could help Representative Winkler if he needs it?
Hey, look, we have super committee. This baby is so good compared to any ones I've ever had that I have no problem. I don't know if we need to. We did go over this, everything that's in the DE2 last time. So let's start looking at the new things. And of course, we'll go everything that is available to be taken out of this or changed or anything like that. But we have a new author's amendment, don't we? Okay. We have the A30 amendment, and every time it says 3449, it's now the Senate file. But, Mark, could you explain the...
Sure.
It's in the A30 amendment.
Madam Chair and members, the A30 amendment, I'll refer to the page and lines on the amendment itself. And page 1, lines 3 to 19 deals with an issue.
Let me first move it. I'll move the A30 amendment. Okay.
You may recall that the original DE2 amendment dealt with advertising and use of exhibition space and other similar materials by the Council on Black Minnesotans. At your last meeting, you asked for language that would add reporting on use of those revenues, and so I've drafted that. It's on page 1, lines 13 to 16 on the A30 amendment, and that's really the only difference from what was in the DE2.
Okay.
And then on page 1, line 20 deletes from the bill a section that it was originally Representative Kath's bill that dealt with reporting on professional and technical contracts. That bill's already passed both the House and the Senate in House File 3589. So that is deleted from this bill. On page 1, line 21, over to page 2, line 2 of the amendment. In the last, when I did the DE2 amendment, I picked up an old version of the webmaster language, and this reinserts the most current version that the committee acted on, which included the concept that the CIO may appoint a webmaster, and that mitigated some of the fiscal note that had been prepared earlier. So this is language that the committee had previously acted on, and it's putting this into this bill. Page 2, line 5 of the amendment is just a technical change, changing shall to must in accord with the general wishes of the chair. And page 2, lines 6 to 14, and page 2, lines 15 to 25 both clarify some provisions relating to the HAVA grants. In both cases, it clarifies that these are in fiscal year 2010, so the money could be spent immediately. and that the sections are made effective immediately. And then in both cases, the appropriation is available to be spent. And in both cases, as the committee requested at your last meeting, it requires the Secretary of State to report to the legislature on expenditure of these funds. Madam Chair, that's the A30 amendment.
Okay. Any questions on the A30 amendment? Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Okay. Now there's a succession of other amendments. Do we have? Okay, let's deal with the A7 amendment. I know that Mike Newlandberg from the OEP is here. Do we have it in our packet? Pull out the A7 amendment. This is continuing with my attempt to move us to a consolidated data service, which we will believe will be in, again, talking. I spent one day last week at the NASIO meeting, which is CIOs from around the country, and the eventual cost savings in data consolidation are just incredible. And we are one of the worst of states with 38 separate data centers, and we're trying to get at that in the first place with the webmaster, and at least have one place that's going to do web design and consolidation of web. And this is something that's modeled after something that's going on in Washington State, with the possibility of instead of using government bonding, to look at a private nonprofit organization to provide a centralized data center or upgrade current facilities. And so I think it's pretty reasonable. Mike Muhlenberg is here from OET if there are any questions about this. Otherwise, I'd like to move the A7 amendment. So it moves us, you know, it moves us in this direction also. So any questions? Bring Mike down if we need any serious questions. Okay. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes. What's the next one? Okay, this is another one from AOT, the A8 amendment. Is that in it?
Yes.
Okay, A8 amendment is also in the packets. This is an issue on contract. The A8 amendment is on contract restrictions that would allow OET, where cable is being laid all over now, and this would allow OET to be able to cooperate with other entities in terms of looking in terms of doing joint laying of cable. Again, Michael is here if he needs to. He's moving here. I might have said something incorrectly. Okay. Do you have a copy of the amendment? Okay. Get him. Yeah. I'll move it as soon as. Yeah. Okay. I'll move the A8 amendment. And Michael, why don't you explain it to us? Say who you are for the tape.
Madam Chair, members for the record, my name is Michael Meilenberg, representing the Office of Enterprise Technology. Currently, there is a restriction in 16C, which is the Department of Administration's statutes related to contracting, and there's a restriction on the ability of state agencies to enter into barter agreements. The restriction intends, as we understand it, to restrict agencies from entering into agreements or contracts with other entities that do not exchange money. We're not entirely sure of the intention of the statute, but as we have read it, it has been a little bit ambiguous, and our broadband folks brought this statute to our attention. Essentially, the Office of Enterprise Technology owns a certain amount of broadband fiber in the state, and that fiber is used to run internet connectivity to other state agencies, to local governments, to school districts, and we provide those services or help provide those services on that fiber. As part of the stimulus funding that has built out or is in the process of building out broadband fiber, some of our people have started to look at the idea of, can we enter into arrangements with private vendors that are using the stimulus money to build out their own fiber? Can we enter into arrangements with them so that we have a right to use their fiber, this new fiber that's being built out, in exchange for their right to use what OET already owns? It's a win-win for the state, because we essentially are able to provide more connectivity to local school districts, local governments, state agencies, and it doesn't cost us anything because it's an arrangement in which we're simply exchanging the right to use each other's fiber. As we looked at this statute, it was unclear as to whether the $100,000 limitation was designed for the term of the contract or the term of the arrangement, or simply an annual restriction. So we're hoping to just bring a little bit of clarification to the statute. We've consulted with the Department of Administration, we don't believe that this creates any problems for any other arrangements. We think it's a technical clarification that could be helpful for the state.
Okay. Any further questions, Mr. Meilenberg? Okay. All those in favor of the A8 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Okay. What's next? What? Oh. Okay, this is the blank amendment, permanent school trust. Okay. Representative Downey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move the unenumerated amendment titled Permanent School Fund Land Management Analyst.
Okay, Representative Downey moves the unenumerated amendment. And
I'm going to talk.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Madam Chair, I have two in my packet. Is there? There's a larger one and then a smaller one. Is there?
They are identical.
One is in
okay.
Revises.
All right, thank you.
Yes.
Okay. Representative Downey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is an idea that you might have heard from Representative Dietrich on. For those who aren't aware, we have a large body of public lands that are in the school land trust bank, and currently the Department of Natural Resources administers those lands and then charges back to the fund the costs of their administration and management of those funds. And the intention here is to bring a kind of financial management perspective to the administration and management of those funds, in addition to what the DNR is currently doing. So they're managing the funds kind of from an managing the lands from an operational standpoint. This amendment puts into the Legislative Coordinating Commission a position that would also look at those lands from a financial stewardship standpoint and make sure that we are working with the DNR to not only optimize good environmental stewardship and conservation of those lands, but also trying to optimize the revenue sources off of those lands so that we could increase the funding to our schools. Those school trust lands are dedicated to funding schools, and other states such as Utah have implemented financial management models that have really tuned up the ability to generate a financial return from the lands. And at a time when our education, K-12 education system, is struggling for funding, the idea that we could manage these lands for financial returns, for example, in Utah, to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars, the thought is that we would put that position into the LCC and have an additional presence there that's looking at the financial stewardship of these lands. So this amendment is Representative Dietrich's bill. Having gone through numerous rounds of revision and refinement and hard-earned consensus, I don't want to speak for anyone, but my understanding from Representative Dietrich is that Chair Wagenius and others have actually come to some agreement and acceptance of this language. So I put forward the amendment for our bill.
And I also checked it with Representative Greiling and Representative Wagenius, and it is in the same exact language as in Representative Greiling's bill. My other contribution to the legislative process, besides setting up an omnibus pension bill, has been to teach people that it's a good idea to put things in as many places as you possibly can. So so I pay the penalty for that by having to do them all the time. So, okay, any questions?
I just want to make sure that, because yes. Representative Dietrich's bill started a substantially larger, different, and a very different tact, and so this is the exact language. So good to go. Thank you.
Okay. All those in favor of the Downey Amendment say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Okay. We get a... Okay, we have a piece again, an unrevised language piece that starts out. The first sentence says a request was made by the project team. This is on some language that the Department of Administration seems to need for the revision for the pre-design of Building 16 and Building 17, and we have someone from the Department of Administration to explain it. State who you are for the take.
Madam Chair, members.
Does everyone have the piece of paper?
Wayne Wislosky with the Department of Administration.
Let's make sure that everyone has what we're looking at. It's an eight. Okay.
And Madam Chair, just what's the actual language that we're... Is it the bolded language?
The bold language is the language.
Okay. Thank you.
And Mr. Shepherd will be able to do that for us properly. While we're learning about it. Mr. Slott.
Madam Chair, members, in the 2010 bonding session, there's an appropriation to do a phase project at the Minneapolis Veterans Home. It essentially would remodel existing Building 16. We then move patients from Building 17 over to 16. Then we would demolish the north wing of 17 and rebuild 17 essentially in phases. And Department of Veteran Affairs completed a master plan for the campus last year, which is similar to a pre-design, but is not technically a pre-design, which is required in statute. And that's typical before the legislature provides funding to do design and construction. The pre-design would have been completed. In this case, it jumped right to funding design and construction for this project and did not include any funding to pre-design. However, the pre-design is a standalone requirement. And so what this would do would be to exempt this project from requiring a pre-design.
Okay. Any questions about this? No. I'll move the bold language on this piece of paper, whatever, the MS-16B-335 language. Any questions? Mark, do you have an amendment that makes sense? Okay.
Madam Chair and members, yes, I think it does make sense. It would read just that Minnesota Statute Section 16B.335 Subdivision 3 does not apply to projects under...
Okay.
Citation there. We'll put that in the proper place in the bill.
Okay. Any questions? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you.
Okay. Anything else? No, we're not going to do that. Assignment. We're... Simon, A1 amendment.
Okay, thank you, members. The A1 amendment is simple. It's a repealer. It has to do with how we select and elect judges in this state. It has to do with the incumbent designation on the ballot. Members, I've been involved since August of 2005 with efforts to reform the way that we select or elect or retain judges. A number of us in this room have been. It's been the subject of a lot of debate. There was a proposal before us this year to do that. It passed all the committees in the Senate. It was in the House, passed the Government Operations Committee on a 14-4 vote. For a number of reasons, that is unlikely to happen this year. But I think we can't lose sight of the fact that there are a couple different aims that we should be shooting for when it comes to elections in general. One is accountability, and the other is fairness. Sometimes they're in tension, sometimes they're in harmony. You'd like them to be in harmony. Accountability in judicial elections in particular, if we're going to have the current system, in other words, if we aren't going to go to something like a retention system or something else, if we're going to keep the current system, at least for now, at least for the next 2 years, maybe forever, if we're going to keep the current system, then accountability is important, because right now there's no standard evaluation tool for judges. That would have been, in my opinion, the best weapon against undue politicization of the judiciary, and that's a whole different argument. We don't need to get into that today, but I think many of us, most of us, I would say, agree that we shouldn't be politicizing those kinds of election contests. The best weapon would be some sort of standard evaluation tool of judges so that the public has something to go on, some idea of whether a judge is fit or unfit. It's probably not always that simple, but some criteria by which to judge who it is that they're voting for. That other aim of fairness is important, too. And I'm afraid that right now with the current system, and again, if what we want is the current system, or if what we're going to have is the current system, whether we want to or not, of competitive elections, fairness is a problem, too, because current elections for judicial office are skewed, some would say fake, in two different distinct ways right now. First, there's very little competition. All of us who are voters know when you turn over the ballot on that other side of the ballot, very, very few of the judges draw any opposition whatsoever. Last time it was under 10% in Minnesota that drew any sort of opposition whatsoever, and you can understand why that's the case, especially since the second point is that there's an incumbent designation that's been on there for quite a while. So judges who run for office have the word incumbent, if they are incumbents, of course, have the word incumbent next to their name. So that dissuades natural competition as well. Now, as I said, we had a chance this session, I believe, to get a good blend of accountability and fairness, an evaluation of performance, along with the real possibility that a judge might lose his or her seat. Meaning in a retention election, for example, there was always that possibility every time that a judge could lose. Right now, it's very, very unlikely that a judge, even a very bad judge, and there are some, most are not. The vast majority are good, honest, thorough, hardworking people. But as with any profession, doctors, lawyers, plumbers, there are some who ought to maybe seek other pursuits. And if that's the case, then there's very little way to there's very little possibility that even they would lose. So I, in the negotiations over a period of years, but particularly this session over this bill, it's been a real awakening for me, not only as a legislator, but as a lawyer who practices before the district courts. And a real awareness that I've had, a new awareness that I have not had before, at just how skewed and some would say even rigged the system is, and about those who choose to keep it that way. And I think that's unfortunate. So it's been a real eye-opener for me talking with judges and their representatives about what the real priorities are here. And I have to tell you that, unfortunately, my impression has been that there is all too often an instinct first towards individual self-preservation of individual judges, and second, the state of the judiciary. That's my personal impression, and it's an unfortunate conclusion that I've reached, but I have reached that conclusion. And that's too bad. That has happened at the leadership level. I'm not trying to impugn the judiciary by any means. But I think at the leadership, at the formal leadership level, unfortunately, there's been far too much of an emphasis on self-preservation of individual judges in office in my judgment, sometimes at the expense of what's best for the overall judiciary. So, again, if we're going to have the current system, if we're not going to have any sort of reform or movement in a different direction, that's fine if we've made that decision. I would have preferred it otherwise, of course. But then I think we have to look at the current system and really figure out, is it fair? Is it a real election or not? And no other office in Minnesota, as you know, has the incumbent designation, even nonpartisan offices for which there's no other marker or identifying characteristic which would tell somebody on the ballot about that person. County commissioners, county attorneys, which in almost all counties, Hennepin for sure, where I live, are nonpartisan. They don't get an incumbent designation. So I guess the way we have it right now is we have very little competition. And when there is competition, the word incumbent is sort of a thumb on the scale. And I think that's something that we should think about, talk about. And I hope that we'll have testimony today. I want members to know that even though this was an amendment and not a bill, and I wasn't required to give any notice to anyone of this amendment, I felt that it was the better course to do so. So I told people far and wide about this amendment, that it would be coming with at least 24 hours notice. I didn't want to ambush anyone. I didn't want anyone to say that in the dark of night, you know, that I tried to sneak something onto a bill. So I think we should have a full and fair discussion about this, and I would invite any testifiers who are here, I think there are some, to testify about the merits or demerits of the bill. So, Madam Chair, it's yours to invite, but I have, but I've issued the invitation just privately so that others are aware of what's coming.
I believe there's at least the judge or so who would like to speak to this. I don't know if there are any comments from committee members before we start. Okay, are there any comments from members of anyone from member of the audience who would like to speak to this? Yes. Please identify.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, good morning, and thank you for the opportunity to appear today. My name is Susan Miles. I am president of the Minnesota District Judges Association, and I appreciate having the opportunity to comment on the amendment being offered by Representative Simon. I've been a district court judge chambered in Stillwater for 13 years, and the association that I represent is a dues-paying organization. Members include virtually all active district court judges in the state of Minnesota, including many members of our Court of Appeals and the Supreme Court. Adoption of this proposed amendment would create chaos out of judicial elections in Minnesota. Since 1949, district and appellate judges who are running for re-election appear on the ballot with the letters INC next to their names. Judicial elections are intentionally nonpartisan, but the INC designation provides voters with a valuable piece of information regarding differences between the candidates. Voters can decide based on whether they think the incumbent has been doing a good job or not. For years, special interest groups have been trying to strip the judicial ballot of the incumbency designation in order to turn these into partisan political contests and increase the likelihood that their candidates would unseat experienced judges. They correctly predict that without the incumbency designation, judicial elections will turn into political free-for-alls. Not only would party endorsements become commonplace, but so would unseemly campaign promises and mudslinging advertisements. Nothing I could imagine would lead to a quicker demise of the public trust and confidence in Minnesota's judicial branch than a politicization of judicial elections. Beyond the direct impact on judicial elections, this amendment would do a grave injustice to the quality of the entire judicial branch. Lawyers who seek appointment to the bench do so knowing the risks of having to run for re-election. That risk analysis includes the fact that to date, elections as a whole have been reasonably orderly and not terribly expensive. Changing that risk analysis by removing incumbency from the ballot will deter qualified candidates from seeking appointment. Most qualified candidates would conclude that the benefits of serving the public in a respected position are far outweighed by the detractions of waging ugly, bruising campaigns and raising significant amounts of money. The quality of the bench in Minnesota is practically second to none, as nationwide surveys have consistently proven. This amendment will lead to the inevitable erosion of that quality, and the public as a whole will pay the price. Whatever problem this amendment is intended to fix has not been identified. In other words, there is nothing to be gained by passing this amendment, and there is a great deal to be lost. I also want to make a couple of personal observations on Representative Simon's comments about the self-serving nature of judges, the MDJA's position and individual judges' positions on Senate File 70 and House File 224. I personally spent many hours with Representative Simon and Senator Rest in hopes to make it a good bill. And they understood, I think, from the outset that MDJA was willing to support retention elections, provided that four very important conditions were met. And those four conditions were overwhelmingly improved by our membership. They included, I'm just going to go to one of them right now, whether or not mandatory merit selection is included in the constitutional amendment. We feel very strongly, very, very strongly, that mandatory merit selection needed to be in that constitutional amendment. And for whatever reasons that perhaps Representative Simon can explain to you, the authors of the bill chose not to include mandatory merit selection in that in the constitutional amendment. If that's self-serving, then I guess the definition of self-serving is much, much broader than I had ever expected it to be. With that, I'll conclude my remarks, and I would like to turn the table over to Judge Kathy Guerin, who is Chief Judge of the Second District.
Okay. We really are under a crunch for a time. You know, as you understand, the court decision yesterday has put special pressure on all of the appropriations committees, and we really have to move fast. So, first of all, if there's anyone standing who has a contrary opinion who wants to speak in favor of the amendment, we'll hear one person in favor of the amendment. And could you just limit your comments now to anything that we need in addition to what Ms. Miles told us?
I will be very brief. Okay. And I respect that, Madam Chair.
And I'm sorry. I know I would like to give hours to discuss this,
probably,
but we just don't
I understand
it.
Almost as much as you do of the constraint you're under.
Okay.
I think you can appreciate that. I've been a judge for 23 years, and this really doesn't concern me, this amendment. I don't speak for myself. I'm fairly certain everyone in my district and perhaps everyone in the state already knows I'm an incumbent. My concern is for the judges of the next generation who do their day-to-day job of being a judge, handling the difficult decisions in the cases that rarely end up in the public spotlight. They've given up their practices and they've made being a judge a career, and we need career judges. We need the wisdom that brings with having this be your career. Many judges are in multi-county districts, where it is impossible for a voter in Grand Rapids, for example, in the 9th District, to really know what the judge in Crookston, also in the 9th District, what their competency is. Incumbent helps those voters to know something about that judge. It would be harder, I believe, for good lawyers in a broad array of specialties to apply for a judgeship. I fear that it would make political factors in the back of our minds play more of a part. It shouldn't play any part. We struggle to have it play absolutely no part in any decision. We already know that a good faith decision made handling a crowded calendar may come back to haunt us. The Minnesota judiciary right now is respected nationally. Representative Simon, I respect your work on the retention bill. I respect the fact that you have sincerely made positive remarks about judges. Don't let your disappointment about what happened with that bill make you support this, which will hurt our judiciary. That's all. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. And again, my apologies for not giving you more time. Okay, there's one person, Mr. Wurzel, who wants to speak. One person who wants to speak in support of the amendment, because I think we've already had a thorough statement from Representative Simon on that.
Very good. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members.
Please say who you are for the tape.
Yes, my name is Greg Wurzel. I'm an attorney. I've practiced law for 30 years in Minnesota. And my comment is that we need elections that, first of all, serve the public. I don't care if they serve the judiciary. They need to serve the public. And that's the question that we need to be presented with today. does the election system we have right now serve the public? And I think the overwhelming answer has to be absolutely not. Because when the voters go to vote, they have no idea who the candidates are or why they should vote for them. And that's happening for several reasons, but perhaps the primary reason is that incumbency designation on the ballot. Just a few elections ago, it was either in 2006 or 2008, there was an open judicial seat in the Dakota County District Court. 13 judges filed for that open seat. Also, there were also 6, 7, or 8 incumbent judges who stood for election. Not one of them was opposed. And I submit to you, attorneys are willing to run for these positions. There's evidence of that every time you turn around when there's an open seat. They are not running for these positions against that incumbent designation because it is almost impossible to win. So what happens is, when no one runs, the public is not served. The voters go to vote, and all they see is that one name on the ballot. Now, this also becomes important in another concept, which is checks and balances. All of our judges right now, basically over 90% of judges are appointed to their positions by the governor. The only effective check on that system is if we have election systems that work, and this election system does not work.
Okay.
So again, I speak on behalf of accountability. Yeah. And we need a method to get rid of the bad judges. Representative Simon is correct. We have some very good judges. We also have some very bad judges. And we need a method to remove them from office.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there comments or questions from members of the committee? Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to encourage opposition to this amendment. I heard the retention bill in GovOps. I voted in support of that bill Representative Simon brought before. This is a dramatic change from what currently exists. And for over 60 years, the word incumbent has been used on the ballot to designate sitting judges. And I think that we all want a well-informed electorate. We all want to make sure that people understand what we stand for, who we are, and why we should be reelected. Certainly, we all can appreciate that. But I believe that the timing is not right. I'm not sure that this is the right approach to be taking, and I think doing this as an amendment to a bill does not provide the greatest amount of opportunity for the discussion that would be needed. And this is so I would just encourage the opposition to the amendment. Thank you,
Representative Downing.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. And actually, I was going to ask a question about the percentage of judges that have ever had to actually put their name and their credentials before the electorate, and I think the testifier indicated that was that 90%, fully 90% of judges are appointed, and I may not have that statistic right, so maybe let me just ask that of the testifier, Representative Simon, kind of across the judiciary, what percentage of judges actually at some point have ever had to put their name and their credentials and their record before the people, other than as an incumbent?
Madam Chair, the 90% figure refers to the judges who, when they initially take office, whether they were elected or appointed to their position, and literally over 90% were at the beginning appointed to their positions. Then they are supposed to stand for an election at the next election more than 1 year away, and that's the first opportunity that the voters get to choose. When those judges now show up on the ballot, they show up as an incumbent. And again, it makes it virtually almost impossible to run against that incumbent designation. I want each of you to think about what it would be like if you had to run against somebody else for your office and they had the word incumbent behind their name. And tell me if you think that would be a fair election.
Madam Chair, if I could continue. I think that's my the reason why I support Representative Simon's amendment is, I mean, the term incumbent, I think, implies something, right? That you perhaps had your name and your credentials before the people at some point, and they chose you. And in this particular case, if 90% never really ran and are being termed an incumbent anyway, it seems to convey more information than is real. And I picked up on a comment, I think it was from Judge Guerin, and I appreciate that the judiciary is a separate branch of government. But, you know, at the top of our chamber, it says Vox Populorum Est Vox Dei, the voice of the people is the voice of God. And I may have misunderstood the comment, but something about
the Vox Populorum.
No, that comment I get. But the comment of one of the testifiers, I think, implied that there's a wisdom to incumbency and there's a wisdom to experience, and we shouldn't denigrate that. And I agree with that. But there's a real wisdom that comes from the people, and I'm not suggesting that judges should go through the meat grinder of reelection and partisan endorsements and things that the legislature should. But let's not accept the fact that an isolated judiciary, absent accountability to the people, is somehow wiser than a judiciary that is actually accountable to the people. I think there's great wisdom in the voice of the people. It makes things a little raucous at times, but given the circumstances and the percentage of judges that have never really had to put themselves before the people, I think there's some wisdom gained through that process, and I wouldn't want our judges to be devoid of that. So I'm going to stand in strong support of the Simon Amendment.
Okay. Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll try to multitask. I guess that I don't have a question. I have a comment. And that is that this designation has been on the ballot for 60 years, but something has changed in that time, which is that the U.S. Supreme Court has told us that Minnesota's traditional way of conducting judicial elections, in which you weren't putting before the voters your decision on controversial matters as a reason to be elected, but in fact you were supposed to be restrained from doing that. And that puts us at a fork in the road. And the fork is, do we go down the path of this amendment, in which we remove the incumbent designation and turn these into real elections, contested elections, just like we've seen in many other states, or do we reform the system and go to a system that has been developed as a proposal for a long time, since 2005 at least, which is the retention election system. And we have to make a choice. Either we're going to have real contested elections, which in which case we should remove the incumbent designation and make them real, which we in fact may lose it in a subsequent court case, potentially, or we need to reform the system and go to a retention type approach, which I think preserves the best of the traditional form that we had in Minnesota. And I think it's fair that we put before the legislature this session both choices, and that's what this amendment does. It puts two choices before us. Either we go with the contested open election system that the U.S. Supreme Court said we must do under our current Constitution, or we change our system and go to a retention-style election, which I think best preserves the traditional nonpartisan character of our elections. And so I think it's entirely appropriate that we put both options on the table this legislative session.
Okay. I would really like, unless someone has to say something, I mean, we'll see how you want to vote when we vote. So unless you want to say something that you think will change the opinion of anybody, I would like to. Ms. Miles, do you have any other comments briefly?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, in response to Representative Downey's question, every judge has to run for election every 6 years. And there is accountability because those elections serve the purpose of removing the quote unquote bad judges in those cases where they happen to exist. Okay. That's the accountability piece in the present system, and okay. It works.
Does anyone else need to have anything explained to them about this amendment? Okay. Representative. Okay, I'm sorry. Yep. This has two more committees to go to, so let's, if you have anything new to add to the discussion, you can say it. Well, just very briefly. Say who you are and just anything that's new. Okay,
Madam
Representative
Chair.
Mason, just a second.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to add one thing. This is a very sensitive area, but the one thing I do know is when there's a problem with a judge, usually there's something in the papers, et cetera, that people know that. So
to me, I will be voting, I will oppose this, because people do need some way of keeping track of who the judge is.
Okay.
Madam Chair, my name is Dale Nathan. I'm with a small organization, The Truth About Minnesota. I will be very brief. The problem goes much, much deeper than simply the word incumbent. The problem involves Minnesota Statutes 490.125 and the definition that goes with it. It requires that judges retire the last day of the month that they turn 70, and that needs to be changed, because what that does, it forces judges to retire and allows the governor the opportunity to appoint a replacement.
Okay.
That's the key problem. 90% of the judges are appointed, and we need to take a thorough investigation of that. I second Representative Mason's opposition, because this amendment is a quick and a not a good way to change our election system. You have to take into account the method by which judges are appointed.
Okay.
I hope you defeat the amendment. Thank
okay.
you.
Thank you. You know, it's relevant to the amendment, but I don't think we're going into that part of the statute. Thank you. Again, your name and then briefly.
My name is Don Mashick. I'm with the Minnesota Judicial Reform and Accountability. I'm also with the Tea Party movement. For 5 years, we've been trying to get hearings about the corruption that rife in the Minnesota judiciary. I'm going to tell you my little bit about my personal story, and you can figure out how I feel about it.
We just want something relevant to this one line.
I was threatened to be killed if I testified in a court 15, 20 years ago. WellsFargoCorruption.com. I went to the county investigator. I had him at my kitchen table.
I don't think that this has any relevance to the one line we're considering.
Okay, well, how about this? Last night, for the last 2 weeks, I've been chasing an attorney around to get my file back so I don't miss discovery deadlines. Told by the police that I can't get the file back. Told by the Lawyers Professional Responsibility Board that I can't get, they have no power to get the file back.
Okay, thanks. I don't see how that's relevant to the thing. So thank you very much
for
coming.
There needs to be elections to get rid of the corrupt judges.
Okay, thank you very much. We now have the Representative Simon Representative Simon renews his motion. All those in favor of the Simon motion say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
The motion passes. Okay. We now have a bunch of, I think we can really get through if we do it. We do have A3 amendment. Who's doing the A3 amendment? Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. As you know, this year, the precinct caucuses are the first Tuesday in February, and on occasion they fall in such a way that there's a conflict between the start of session and precinct caucuses. So instead of it taking an action of the legislature, if we just simply pass this law, which says that the legislature may not meet in regular session in an even-numbered year before the date set, meaning the precinct caucuses. So it's a very simple amendment. I move the adoption of S3134A3.
Yes. Does anyone have any objection to this? Okay. All those in favor of the A3 amendment say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes.
Oh.
Okay. The A4 amendment. Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move the adoption of S3134A4 amendment, and I have a small modification to the language. On line 1.5, after unpaid, insert Secretary of State trained before volunteers.
Okay. Again, simple concept, I think. Anybody have any problems with this amendment? Representative Bingham.
Not the oral amendment.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
No.
Oh.
She incorporated.
Oh, I'm sorry. The one question I do have, Representative Kiffmeyer, is I'm channeling Mary Liz Holberg right now. What about access to information?
Oh.
There's nothing in here that would prohibit those voting records and personal. I'm just saying that with and I do know it's data private, Representative Kalin. But as far as would they wouldn't have any access anywhere near the computer systems that would have this, or I'm just a little concerned about that.
Well, there was some.
Madam Chair, I can respond to that. I didn't speak to the amendment, but I can. Certainly, I think that's an excellent question, but having done this for quite a while, when they are trained, it gives you that opportunity to do that. But these are not computer systems that have access to personal data. This is election information, the precinct finder. It's basically answering questions about what does it take to register. Very common information that would be normally put on the website, in newspapers, in any sort of way. Many times just being able to be that access. But otherwise, you have to use internal Secretary of State staff, which would probably be a part of that component too. But in this way, you could use the League of Women Voters, volunteers. You could use other people like that who want to do that. Greatly, greatly helps. And then they would be trained to no access to private data.
Providing customer service information was very vague, and so that's why I had the question about it. But oral amendment, I think it's fine.
Okay. Mr. Black, do you think there's any problem with this?
I don't.
Okay. Since there's some...
Madam Chair, I did not ask the Secretary of State office ahead of time. I just...
Okay. Well, since they're here, we might as well.
I think it'd be wonderful.
Okay.
Madam Chair, members, Bert Black, legal advisor for the Secretary of State's office. I'm just seeing this now, but I don't see that there would be any problem. We may have actually even done this.
Oh. Okay. Okay. All those in favor, thank you very much, Mr. Black. And, of course, we do have several steps, and there'll be ample opportunity to remove it if there's a problem. What, refine it. We have the A4 amendment. Representative Kiffmeyer renews her motion. All those in favor of the A4 amendment say aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Opposed. Motion passes. Okay, what? Oh, I have one, which is David Arbeit is here from the MIN Geospatial Information Office. This is a set of papers you have in it looking like this. Sorry, it's not. Paperclip. Not in revisers form, but this I've looked this over thoroughly, and I really believe that this is just technical, that the language, the amendment proposed, is technical clearing up. Mr. Arbeit, do you want to say something to us? And does any member of the committee have any questions? Mr. Arbeit, do you want to just say a few words?
Oh. Yes, Madam Chair. I'm David Arbeit, Director of the Minnesota Geospatial Information Officer, State GIO. In January, I submitted this report to the committee as required by legislation that created our office last year. There were 12 legislative provisions that were identified there per the legislative language that created us that we were reviewed. Of those 12, five were purely housekeeping in nature, and as Chair Kahn notes, that provide for more consistency and some language regarding standards and some streamlining of notifications about boundary changes. All of the organizations and agencies that are affected by it have reviewed this and agreed that this would be a good thing to do. I've left some of the recommendations that may have affect some of the environmental committees out of this set of recommendations, and probably will want to bring that back next year.
Okay. As I said, I've looked this over, and I think it really is in the direction of housekeeping amendments. Representative Kiffmeyer?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. Arbeit. The one question I have in regards to this, it's geospatial, but also would this be something that would also take a look at, I mean, this is a whole large area. And I know that there's county data. There's a whole. How comprehensive is this? I mean, are you? Is I know sometimes you got to be careful not making something so comprehensive it becomes too large to even really do. On the other hand, it is an opportunity when you're doing it. As long as you're doing it, to take a broader look, even if you only recommend maybe implementation in one particular area. Can you just give me a little more, just from that perspective?
Yes, Madam Chair. Representative Kiffmeyer, these legislative provisions simply went back and took a look at existing legislation that had previously referred to the Land Management Information Center, which no longer exists, and recommended changes to harmonize the language with the current creation of the Minnesota Geospatial Information Office. These were all reviewed. The recommendations here were sent to the Association of Townships and Association of Counties, and their executive directors agreed that these would not have a deleterious impact on them and supported the recommendations. We did not really pursue the broader agenda, which is really under the umbrella of the mission of the office, in terms of a broader impact statewide on other aspects of the geospatial information technology. But that's what the office is doing on an ongoing basis. This is just limited to some technical issues.
That's a good start, Madam Chair, and thank you very much for that clarification.
Okay. Any other questions?
Madam Chair, I'm willing to go along for now, but just want to register my concern that we need to check. There's some parts of the state, as we know, a bill that I have in conference committee right now related to Mount Simon Hinckley Aquifer that has been very, very difficult to map, but the access for citizens to be able to understand what proposed projects and impacts on the aquifer, I want to make sure that this change from integrating data into the state's database versus this new language that just says must be made available, the impact of that and the accessibility of the information in the new format. So I will follow up, and I'll connect Mr. Arbeit with some local experts in Chisago County that you'll hear from.
Sure.
But I just want to register that, and if it turns out that it's an issue, I will voice concern and see how we can fix it.
Sure. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions about this? Okay. All those in favor, I guess I've – did I move it? I'll move the amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Representative Pepin, you had an oral amendment. Representative Pepin, you said you had an oral amendment, or is it two?
I have an oral, and I also have the A6 amendment.
Okay.
Which would you like me to do first?
Oh, let's do the A6 amendment.
All right, I got to find it here.
Representative Pepin moves the A6 amendment.
Okay. This amendment is, in my opinion, a good government transparency type of amendment. Basically, what it says is if a non-government organization wants to accept an appropriation or a grant from state government, and that organization has any officers or employees that make more than the governor of the state, that in order to take the grant or appropriation, they must agree to submit a list of the compensation of the top three officers or employees to the AG, so that we would have that information available. So it's just a transparency type of amendment.
I have only one problem with it, because I think it's, I think it's, that's a little egregious. Would you agree to taking out the 118 to 120 sentence, the one that they have to do the written directed marketing materials, has to list that? I think that's a little, again, I seem to be the major, I won't say anything nasty. I'll just ask you to take it out. Okay.
I think I'd agree to that.
Okay.
Real quick.
Representative Bingham.
Never mind. I won't waste the minutes.
Okay.
Sorry.
So Representative Pepin moves striking. She's incorporated into her amendment striking the sentence that starts on 118 to 120.
Would you repeat that, please?
The sentence that starts with, it's Representative Pepin's, but striking the sentence that starts on 118 and goes to 120. I think the legislature telling people how they have to do their marketing materials is a little extreme. Okay, everyone understand that? All those in favor of the Pepin amendment say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Okay. we have a Kalin amendment and an oral Pepin amendment, and then I think we're free.
So
Representative Kalin.
Madam Chair, you should have the House File 3682 language distributed. It's sections 2 through 6 are the ones I'll be adding, moving to add to the bill. Mr. Shepard has informed me that Representative Pepin, Section 1, and the housekeeping Section 7 are incorporated in the DE amendment that we've already adopted. Sections 2 through 6 have been passed by this committee. They're fairly technical changes to public building enhanced energy efficiency program brought to us by our friends at admin and working with the Attorney General's Office and Department of Minnesota Management and Budget, just a few technical changes that add line of credit to the master lease purchase financing mechanism we've approved over the past several years. And the bill is sitting on the General Register, but to take your advice, Madam Chair, I thought it'd be best to tuck it into as many vehicles as are moving forward as that are appropriate to help us save money. So I will move incorporation or adoption of, we'll call it the 3682-1 amendment, sections 2 through 6.
Okay. Representative Downing.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Kaelin, I apologize. I was not in committee when we heard this. Could you just briefly, I don't need a huge description, but sections 5 and 6, are, it seems like somehow we're leveraging energy improvement programs for financing. Could you just give us a quick thumbnail sketch of what that is?
Sure. Very, very briefly, the challenge for the state is to, there are a couple of ways we can do energy savings projects that are capital intensive, but the energy savings over the over those years, the energy reductions pay for that capital. We have used performance contracting using private companies that we currently are using actually quite a bit. I talked to Honeywell and Johnson Controls quite a bit about their contracts that are out there and how we can continue to work with them, or bonding. The third is this this new mechanism that was developed in 2008 that the governor proposed as part of a supplemental budget and I carried, that just uses the cash flow savings from future years through a master lease purchase agreement originally, and then now we're the line of credit language will allow a slightly greater number of financing tools that are all in the sort of master lease purchase agreement mechanism.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. All those in favor of the Kaelin Amendment say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Okay. What do we have left? Oral amendment from Pepin. The end. Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Where does it go?
I would move on page 13, lines 13, 28, and 13, 30.
Just a sec. This is the DE2 amendment.
Of the DE2 amendment, I'm sorry. On page 13, lines 13.28 and 13.30. That after the words benefit in each of these lines, we insert the words or cost, because we don't know that there's only going to be benefits by making this change of contracts only to smaller banks. So it would be to look at, if we're going to do a study, I think we should look at not only the benefits but also the potential costs.
Okay. Everyone understand that? Any other comments on that? All those in favor of the Pepin Amendment say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion passes. Commissioner,
Madam Chair, on this same subject here, I'm noticing that community financial institutions are defined as a federally insured bank or credit union. Those two are very different. And so I have a question about, especially when you incorporate it into this study, not quite sure exactly how to do this,
this was from the Mahoney bill that we dealt mm-hmm. with, and I don't know why those are signaled out and why that's.
It seems as though in this particular case that federally insured bank, and if we would just strike or credit union, in on line 14.2. That might keep it more structurally simple.
Well, it's the credit union is then modified by the next phrase. You know, this came from Representative Mahoney's bill,
you're on one of the next two committees if this goes through, either finance or ways and means. And can we just speak, talk to, could you just talk to Representative Mahoney about it, and then let's do it at the next level?
What is the next level, Madam Chair?
Finance, ways
finance.
And means.
You're on that.
Whatever.
Well, yes, I am, but.
Well, you know, I don't. I just, for example, just striking credit union doesn't work because there's, oh, we're on page 14.
Yes.
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Kiffmeyer, I'm not sure if I'm getting at your question entirely, but I do remember in testimony from a definitional standpoint, there is a difference between a bank and a credit union. I believe it was the intent of the author to make sure that if something were done, that credit unions, given their kind of small business connections, would be equally considered along with banks. So, I don't know if that answers your question or not.
Well, how about if I just leave it for right now? Right. Let me just, I mean, we've got, are there other things to do on this bill?
No. Just pass it. What?
Are there other stops?
There are other stops.
Well,
I'm certainly amenable to fixing it if we need it to be fixed. But I don't think, I don't feel informed enough to do it right now.
Mm-hmm.
I think, Representative Pitt.
Just on, Madam Chair, just on this section, my recollection is that there was I know I've heard a similar bill to this in I think it was bioscience, workforce development, and I think finance. I don't believe we've ever actually heard this bill, and at least this study in committee. It was on the agenda, but I don't believe it was heard. Maybe I was just not here, but I believe that it was at one point removed from the schedule, and I don't believe Representative Mahoney actually came before this committee and talked to us about this. So, it's just kind of a peculiar situation. Obviously, I don't like the section at all, even with the study, although the study is better than what he was originally trying to do. I guess the process is a little confusing to me because maybe you could clarify that, but I don't recall Representative Mahoney being here in front of this committee and talking about this or the original bill.
We did not hear it. Okay. Okay, I was hoping, I think, is this the only thing that we have remaining really on this bill? I apologize for putting it in under those circumstances. We are meeting again this afternoon, so let's bring Representative Mahoney in and let's leave that section to discuss that section. But is that okay that's the only thing that we need to do? And my apologies for putting it in under those circumstances. Representative Bingham?
Obviously your call, Madam Chair, but both Representative Mahoney and Representative Kiffmeyer serve on the next committee, too. So Mahoney's not on finance? Oh, I'm going to just be quiet.
I think, we're only, the bill just goes to finance, and I think there's no problem. We don't have to go through a step on the floor. So I think there's no problem in bringing Representative Mahoney in and discussing this section and putting this section into the bill.
And Madam Chair, I think that perhaps if someone wanted to testify on this, since we hadn't had an opportunity, I know I have heard the original bill in a different committee and heard some testimony, but I think it'd be good if we gave a Bankers Association or someone from the industry an opportunity to hear what they think, if they're interested.
Okay. We also have the commissioner. Maybe we'll put that on. We'll put that on the after. Commissioner of Administration wants to talk about materials transfer issues. They asked for. Do you want to just I don't think we'll deal with an amendment right now, but Commissioner, maybe you'd like to just say a few words so we can get. And Representative Simon, did you have a question?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I was just wondering procedurally how you envision the path of this bill. Obviously, we've got a few days left in session.
It just goes to finance. We pass it here, and then it just goes to finance.
Right, and then the floor, and then I'm just, I know that Senator Pogemiller has told senators that he wants all of their conference committees done by Sunday.
Well, no, we don't take our orders from Senator Pogemiller.
Okay.
So, briefly, I have more experience doing that with other people on this committee, but.
And I've seen you in conference, Madam Chair.
What?
I've seen you in conference, and I know that to be true. I just want to make sure that the bill will move.
I started thinking about time and, you know, the fact that the nice thing is we get it to finance without any steps, so it has to be heard in finance, ways and means, and I haven't heard any schedule that gets us finished with conference committee. And since it's a Senate file, the nice thing about this is if Senator Pogemiller is correct, that means we just zap the Senate file over to the Senate and they take it. So we're home free. Okay. Commissioner, just few words on the materials.
Thank you.
Representative Pepin, did you? Okay.
Actually, I have a different question on a different part of the bill. Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair, members. My name is Sheila Rieger, and I'm the commissioner at the Department of Administration. Thank you for the opportunity to quickly talk about an issue that we have. We were hoping to talk about this in a little more length with an amendment, but just real quickly, we'll share the nature of what we're talking about today. We, similar to what happened in, I think, 2003 with our PrintCom division, many of you were around at that time, we found ourselves operating a business essentially that was losing money and eventually had to close that business. With the economy and with the budget cuts that have gone on across the state, we're finding that we're running into that situation with two more of our businesses, essentially, the materials transfer unit and imminently our resource recovery unit. Right now, our materials transfer unit is losing $15,000 each month, and we have been working very, very hard to figure out how we can continue to operate that business. And there's a piece of legislation that right now is really handcuffing us in balancing our books, so to speak. And we have much more detail about that, and we're hoping to get some amendment, a waiver to a piece of legislation that will help us resolve those issues.
Well, maybe particularly, you know, maybe one of the things we should look at is a waiver, but a sunset on the waiver and a report. I'm not putting in language at this point, but we'll maybe Mrs. Shepherd can work with the language and do that, and we'll have that. We can bring that before us again this afternoon when we reconvene. We'll hopefully, we're going to hear the Marquardt bill this afternoon, and so hopefully we'll just finish up this one and send it on its way then. Representative Downey.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and without taking us down a rabbit hole here, Commissioner, could you just briefly describe, I don't need an extensive description of what these functions are, but are there private sector businesses that would perform this function for you then in place of what you're currently having to perform internally?
Madam Chair, Representative Downey, in fact, there are. It's a circumstance where we do a range of services that we are now will have to operate at a rate that is considerably higher than market rate. We don't have enough business to continue to support the staff that we have on board. Looking at a rate of $42.50 per hour, we would need to move to $60 an hour just to support the level of staff that we have. There are outside operations. In fact, there are current M contracts that have been in place for years that we can use to do portions of that business. In this brief,
materials, is this also the janitorial services?
No, Madam Chair. This is, I have someone here that can explain that a little more detail real quickly. David?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Dave Fielding, Director of Plant Management. The materials transfer operation delivers your mail, picks up the trash, picks up recycling, handles events, and supports agencies in moving furniture, moving boxes, et cetera. Several of those functions are statutorily required, central mail, resource recovery. The others are essentially discretionary business operations. In the past, we've had sufficient volume here at the state to make a standing business of those total operations. that business has gone away through a series of reductions in agency activity. And so we have to continue to provide support for mail and for resource recovery and for picking up the general trash, and we will continue to do events. But it's these other discretionary, very difficult to plan for operations that we simply need to take out of the books in order to balance the budget. And it does not, Madam Chair, it does not include anything having to do with janitorial services.
Madam Chair, thank you. When you talk about discretionary, that somewhat implies that you don't have to. So I'm just not quite sure what the legislation then is a hindrance right. to you.
I think what we're asking is we really need more definition of what we want. I think this language is a little too broad, and it's certainly setting a degree of disease, I would say, among unease, I would say, is a better word, of people that we come into contact with. So,
Madam Chair,
I would like,
if I may, Printcom was the model. This is exactly the same situation that we faced at that time, and the problem at the time was that because of Statute 16C.09, the state was prohibited from cutting its operations because they had staff, and the statute says if you have individuals available and able to do the work, you can't enter into a service agreement to do the work. And so Statute 16C.085 was introduced and passed, which provided a specific exemption just for Printcom. And what we're asking for here is a specific exemption now for materials transfer and resource recovery, not a general waiver, but specific to those business units.
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm intrigued by this in part because we have put this target out there for Department of Administration to realize kind of cross-agency savings. It sounds like it'd be right in that. And Madam Chair, I'd be willing to try to work with the department to come up with something, and yourself, if there's an opportunity to add another amendment into here this afternoon or something like that. I'd be glad to try and help.
Well, I don't want to add this in until we kind of work something out.
Absolutely.
Since we are going to meet again this afternoon to take care of the.
Yeah. So I'm willing to meet offline and try and pull that together between now and when we'd have a chance to do it. Thank you.
Just one note of caution about going down that fork. Yeah. I think there's another fork that we could look at, which is the shared services model that could look at Ramsey or Hennepin or other public folks that are. And I know that you guys are very creative and very enterprising, but I think that we want to look at can we do some win-win-win here. So I just want to throw that on the table as those discussions go forward.
Let me say, in terms of the language that we're looking at, I'd much more like to see what the effect. I might much more like to look forward to doing this in January than doing it right now, and put some language about looking at it, incorporating the concept of shared services and so forth. I'm a little concerned that this takes in print services. We completely understood. We completely understood what that business is. This just seems much more amorphous to me, so I'm not. So, anyway, we've got when are we after session? Half an hour after session. So, meeting adjourned, and we'll see everyone then. Recessed. Sorry.